So now we've got on the phone one of the members of that group, as well as an activist and fighter down in the Flagstaff, Arizona area. Clee, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. We're getting you loud and clear. So welcome to the show. I was wondering if you would be up for speaking about your campaign. There's been a lot of press lately about the snowball, the Arizona snowball, which is part of a very important mountain. And is being polluted with wastewater, and there's just been a court appearance that brings around some gray clouds in the case. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah. My name is Clee Benally. I'm a volunteer with the Save the Peaks Coalition, which has been working to protect the San Francisco Peaks. It's a mountain located in northern Arizona. It's the highest point in Arizona, and we've been trying to protect this mountain from Arizona Snowball Ski Resort. They currently lease part of the sacred mountain from the United States Forest Service, so this land is public land, and the Arizona Snowball has proposed back in 2002 to expand their development, and the most controversial part of it is to make snow with wastewater on over 205 acres of this sacred mountain. It has not been implemented yet. We've gone through a very lengthy environmental analysis process, and in March 8th of this past year, the forest supervisor of the Coconino National Forest, who manages the peaks, decided to approve the desecration of this mountain with the use of 180 million gallons of wastewater per season on this sacred mountain, despite the protests and the appeals that were made from over 13 tribes which hold this mountain sacred. That decision, in turn, was appealed directly into court, and we were just more recently, starting in the beginning of October, and just a few days ago, it ended with the ruling that the judge had made, but we had gone to trial. Six tribes, the Diné Nation, the Navajo Nation, the Hopi Tribe, the Hualapai, Havasupai, Yavapai Apache, White Mountain Apache, as well as the Sierra Club, Southwest Center for Biological Diversity, the Diné Hetafi Association, which is a association of medicine practitioners from the Navajo Nation, as well as the Hopi Traditionalist, all filed lawsuits against the Forest Service to prevent this development from happening. And on January 11th, just a few days ago, we lost in court on all counts, and we had first of all claimed, you know, where part of our lawsuit was that the Forest Service violated its own processes, it violated its own laws, it did not even study what the impacts would be if children were to eat this snow, this wastewater made snow. So the trial that we had was on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was a law that has never been tested before in relation to Native American sacred sites and religious practice in the United States. This is something that was an angle that our attorneys were hoping would be more fruitful, because this is a law that really recognized in a lot of sense the complex relationships between federal land management agencies and sacred areas, but it had never been applied to tribes before, and this was the first case. And unfortunately, on January 11th, the judge ruled against us and set a horrible precedent. But we are in the midst of appealing that. The Navajo Nation and other tribes and groups will appeal it, and basically that's going to end us up in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, California. And, you know, this is going to be a pretty lengthy process. It already has been. Arizona Snowball has been trying to expand its development for a number of years. And, you know, through the unification of the tribes that hold this mountain sacred and environmental groups and concerned community members, we've been able to stop them, you know, until now. They have not implemented this development, but right now the courts are saying it's okay. And what we are saying is that, you know, there are no mechanisms that exist in the United States today that ensure protection for sacred sites, ensure the protection for our, you know, continued practice in relation, the protection of our continued practice in relation to these sacred sites. And that's a very big challenge right now that puts us in a very difficult place where, as Native people, our human rights are not protected under law. And this is a very complicated case. It's setting a lot of precedent, and it has set precedent in the past as far as the San Francisco Peaks controversy and the previous allowing of the ski resort development. It's been very controversial, and we're still continuing to fight today.
And what? And so you're fighting in the courts. What other arenas are you considering in your challenge of the snowball effect of the snowball of the Arizona snowball? I've seen your movie the Snowball Effect, you obviously do lots of mass media of mass education. What other stages is this struggle taking shape in?
Well, I am the director of a documentary that is a 56-minute documentary that addresses this issue, and it's something that we created to do public outreach. I'm the founder of a nonprofit organization called Indigenous Action Media, and we do media justice work because what we recognize is that in our indigenous communities, when we're facing environmental and social justice issues, a lot of times the local medias or the regional media do not cover our issues, or when they cover it, it's very biased. So we're empowering ourselves with the resources, with consultation, with training for indigenous youth. And the Snowball Effect is a documentary that was a project of that. You know, a lot of times, you know, what we're trying to do is, first of all, let people know that these issues exist, so we're not just swept under the carpet and just plowed right over. So it's a very big part of it in relation to media justice. The other avenues of our campaign are basically, we always carry ourselves in a manner that is based on our spirituality in relation to respect, because this is what we are struggling for, is respect. So all of our actions are supported by that, and all of our actions reflect that. There's currently a young organization called Youth of the Peaks, which is mobilizing youth. It's a youth-led movement, and it's a youth mobilizing movement right now, made up of a number of young high school students, about 14 to 18 years old, and they've been very effective in doing outreach, educating people in many different creative forms. We've been, you know, doing everything from constantly holding prayer vigils to outright, you know, demonstrations and protests. But also what we're doing is putting pressure on our local elected officials, and more nationally elected officials that represent us, to say that this is not an acceptable plan to desecrate, to allow the desecration of the sacred site, that would violate the religious freedom practice and degrade the environment, but of course violate the religious freedom and practice of over 14 tribes, which constitute about a 500,000 people in southwestern Arizona. We are urging people to write letters to the Flagstaff City Council. And Flagstaff is a small town that's at the base of this sacred mountain that's caught in the conflict. A lot of people believe that if Snowball, the ski resort, does not get snowmaking, then they're going to go out of business and the local economy would suffer. But it's not the case. You know, the Forest Service's own science and the facts that we see that are have been coming out of the city of Flagstaff's own data and studies in relation to Snowball say that that's not the case, but still people believe and they're caught up in this economic, confusion and illusion. And we're asking people to put pressure on the mayor of Flagstaff and the city council because they have entered into contract with Arizona Snowball to sell the wastewater, and that's 1.5 million gallons per day. If they're allowed to do this plan, that's what they would be spraying on the Sacred Mountain. So you can plug into our website, www.savethepeaks.org, and send a letter right away. And it is regardless of if you're from the U.S. or from Canada or from wherever in the world, because we need the support of the international community. And that's something that is really been an asset to us. And we recognize that in many different indigenous issues, that when we do have the support of the international community, when the world is watching, then people take things a little bit more serious. And that's part of what we're doing as well. But there are many things that we are utilizing, you know, to all of what we can apply, but everything in regards to our spiritual practice and the spiritual nature of what our struggle is.
You mentioned the Youth of the Peaks. We'll get into them a little bit more after we take a short musical break. They've recently faced some rather extreme forms of police harassment. But again, we'll get into that a little more detail. We're just going to take a quick musical break, and then we'll be right back. We're talking to Klee Benali of the Save the Peaks Coalition here on Native Solidarity News.
This time in life, I decided I'm gonna strive. Go for my goals and do what I gotta do to survive. I'm tired of all these drugs and alcohol, not respecting my body, polluting my mind. This is not the kind of life that I want to live. I want to learn more about our traditional ways, the way our ancestors and elders used to live their lives, our dances, our songs, our language. My name is Twas. I am Nukwakum. My crest is a wolf. This is who I am and where I come from. It ain't easy being Native and young, living with the influences that we see and we hear with our everyday life. So for now, I'm gonna set myself free. I'm gonna believe. I'm gonna be me. This time in life, I decided I'm gonna strive. Go for my goals and do what I gotta do to survive.
Welcome back to Native Solidarity News. We are once again speaking with Klee Benali of the Save the Peaks Coalition. Just before we took a break, you had mentioned the Youth of the Peaks. We had tried to arrange a conversation with one of the members of that organization, but unfortunately that fell through. So I was wondering if you would be interested in speaking about what led to their harassment by the Flagstaff area anti-gang unit.
Well, it's basically the Youth of the Peaks have been mobilizing and been very effective in their outreach and activating young indigenous people who are awakening to a consciousness and desiring, you know, to help heal the wounds in their communities by getting involved in the environmental and the cultural struggle that is to save the peaks. And the Flagstaff Gang Task Force, after a very successful vigil that had about 200 people in attendance on December 6th of this last year, which I'll have to add that out of those 200 people, about 80% of them were youth, which is really powerful. And the very next day, the gang task force went into Coconino High School, which is a school where a lot of the youth are organizing out of. They proceeded to tear down flyers for events that the Youth of the Peaks had organized, including one of the events, which is a film screening of my documentary, The Snowball Effect, which was approved by the school administration to be shown at the school. But the gang task force still took these flyers down. And the gang task force wears SWAT-style uniforms. They wear these uniforms that look like their tactical gear. And they tore down the flyers and they started questioning Youth of the Peaks. So they saw some of them walking through the halls passing out flyers, or you know, they started questioning people who was in the Youth of the Peaks. A couple of youth, you know, just sort of said no comment, and three of them were approached by the Flagstaff Gang Task Force and told to go to the administration office of the school. This was two 14-year-olds and a 15-year-old, a 15-year-old named Alberta Nels, who is a very powerful, outspoken young woman in this Youth of the Peaks organization. They were questioned repeatedly, asked who their leader was, and if they had permission for these events, and they said, yes, we have permission. There was no guardians present, and there was no administration. So they were just intimidated and harassed. And what happened after that was the school administration canceled the screening that was approved at the school. And there was the very next day, there was increased intimidation when the Youth of the Peaks decided to hold a press conference to address their concerns, along with their parents, to voice their concerns to the community. Over seven law enforcement vehicles, including a mass arrest wagon, including about 15 officers, were there basically for intimidation measures and to, you know, from what they were saying, you know, to make sure nothing went wrong. But these are very peaceful individuals. They're very young individuals that are just standing up to protect their culture, and they're the ones who should be protected from the police, you know, here, because they're completely harassing and intimidating them. So subsequently, because of the outreach that was done in the community, there was an apology that was given by the Flagstaff Gang Task Force, because ultimately, the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, got involved, and they're still involved, and we're not sure yet if they're going to be pressing charges or you know, filing suit against the gang task force, because their rights were violated. These young people's rights were violated. It was completely uncalled for action as far as what the gang task force did. So the gang task force on January 1st apologized, and they revealed that they were reforming their task force, that instead of wearing their tactical gear, they have to wear khakis and polo shirts, and they have to go through sensitivity training, which is great, but at the same time, a lot of the youth are concerned that it's not enough. So they are proposing to do racism and cultural sensitivity trainings as well for these law enforcement officials. You know, one thing I'd like to add about Youth of the Peaks is that at their meetings, there's 20 to 30 youth, and, you know, they're predominantly young young women, you know, very strong, very, you know, powerful individuals. And their response was one saying that we need to respond with love and not with fear or not with anger, that we understand, you know, what these law enforcement, you know, officials are trying to do. They're trying to scare us. They're trying to intimidate us and scare their families, you know, to frame these young people as a gang, as a, you know, a group that's promoting anarchism. And that's clearly not the case. And another issue that we were faced with that was very problematic was the local media started using I somehow connecting in the media, like these arrests throughout the country of quote-unquote eco-terrorists, these actions that were, I guess, arrests made by the FBI across the country. Two arrests were made in Arizona. So the same day that the Youth of the Peaks action was on the front page of the paper, that's what they stated, was that this, you know, at the same day that this happened, and repeatedly in articles, there's been some connection that has been that the local media has tried to draw, but it's totally inappropriate and it doesn't fit. But it's another way that not only the media, but you know, these sort of outside groups are trying to frame and demonize these young people, these young Native people who are taking a stand for their rights, who are taking a stand for their culture, who are taking a stand for their community's health, and they've done nothing wrong at all.
Well, and even just last year, the FBI issued a statement saying that alongside so-called eco-terrorists, indigenous sovereigntists were at the top of their warning list, that these are the most dangerous people out there. And this says a lot to me that that indigenous people fighting for or asserting autonomy and asserting sovereignty are looked at as dangerous, are looked at as people that want to cause harm and to hurt people. It says a lot to me that that police, and then similarly up here in Canada, we have seen an anti-terrorist squad. Their name escapes me at the moment, but they've been used predominantly against people in Skequelquelt, in against other indigenous groups that are trying to, that aren't violent, that are only trying to reclaim reclaim territory, to pass on training to their to their youth, and INSET, and this police squad is called INSET. Just a few months ago, they arrested and then later released without charging members of the West Coast Warrior Society, who were only training youth in the community how to fish, how to hunt. But this is also seen as terrorism by the police, by these enforcement officials. So I mean, it seems like a very common phenomena.
Yeah, we recognize the struggle in Skequelquelt. We recognize the indigenous struggles for dignity, you know, for our sovereignty and our cultural sovereignty, our true cultural identity, to be ensured, you know, survival for our ways of life. And this is something that, you know, one thing I'd like to acknowledge is that, you know, these borders, we did not draw these borders. You know, as Aslan Underground, an awesome, you know, group out of LA says, we didn't cross the borders crossed us. And this is, you know, something that we recognize, that our struggles that we are faced with are, you know, because of this system, you know, the predominant system in our society values, money and material accumulation, above health and the well-being, of our community, which is, you know, very much sacrificed in our communities, and what we see in the indigenous values. And one thing I want to mention is that, you know, everybody can be part of the indigenous resistance, because everybody's indigenous to somewhere: Asia, Africa, Europe, North America, South America. We have our roots connected to the earth, and we recognize that the value of success for our people is one of health and not of competition of wealth and material accumulation and consumption, that our value of success is more oriented towards health. So this struggle that we're faced with is something that, you know, we recognize as a conflict that is across the globe. And, you know, this indigenous movement is not, you know, one that's isolated. You know, so we do recognize the struggles up for our brothers and sisters, our relatives to the north and to the south and all across this globe. You know, one thing I'd like to mention as well, as far as the FBI and the intimidation, and, you know, the way that our actions are considered a threat And they responded in these ways, just like the young people that are taking a stand as well up for Skugwokwok and the other sacred sites in y'all's territories, is that this is something, it's threatening because they're very afraid in many ways of the power of our identities and our connection. As long as we exist, we are a reminder of the connection that we have to this land, that is something that is, you know, since time immemorial, and we represent the theft and the genocide, and that is something that is a very present danger to the integrity of the system, because it shows that it's based off of corruption. It shows that it is based off of lies and so much suffering. And this is something that, unfortunately, we recognize that has not stopped. It is still ongoing today. Just a few days ago, as the word got out that we had lost the court ruling, it was 2 days after that decision, on our local news station, the main feature story was that the FBI and the local law enforcement officials were stepping up security measures around the Snowball Ski Resort. And also, their main message was sent out was that they're going to make sure that, everybody is in full compliance of the laws at protests and nobody becomes violent. Well, what we're saying here is that, you know, the law enforcement officials should be protecting us from the violent aggressors that are these developers, like Arizona Snowball, I believe it's Sun Peaks, these other, you know, or these developers are threatening our way of life. They're waging wars. They're committing cultural genocide against our people. They're contributing to that as well in different ways. And, you know, these things are rewarded, you know, in this day and age. When the ruling came out, there was a lot of people that were stating, especially, you know, the ruling came out a few days ago, and recently we were celebrating a great, you know, the achievements of the civil rights movement here in the U.S. with Martin Luther King Jr. But we as Native people cannot celebrate today because our civil rights are still being violated. Our human rights are being violated, and it's difficult for us to celebrate because we are still being denied our humanity, and our ways of life, like I was saying earlier, are viewed as a threat, and it's difficult to find justice in a place where the justice system has unfortunately been based off of, you know, deceit, corruption, thievery, and the extermination of our people. It's very much part of the historical policy of not only the U.S. government, but the Canadian government.
Mm-hmm. You've said so much. I can't thank you enough for speaking with us today. Unfortunately, we're all out of time. But maybe could you just quickly say how people can get in contact with you, if people are interested in getting in contact with Indigenous Action Media, or how to get a copy of The Snowball Effect, where people can reach you for more information, for ways that they can help out.
Well, you can reach the Save the Peaks Coalition via email or mail. All the information is at www.savethepeaks.org. That's www.savethepeaks.org. And it is going to take all of us to take a stand, to realize that, you know, when people stand up for justice in your communities, when you stand against injustice in your communities in peaceful and spiritual manner, you're contributing to heal the wounds that exist in our communities. And all these actions, the developments, and all of the things that we see, a lot of times are just symptoms of a far greater wound that exists with people, you know, destroying their own humanity. And what we are trying to do is say that we as Indigenous people who have been here since time immemorial, we know how to live with the earth. There is a way to live with the earth, and there's a way not to live with the earth. And hopefully we can all recognize that when we choose to live with the earth, we also choose to live with health, with harmony, and with respect. And, you know, I thank you for your time and for all that y'all are doing up there. And our prayers are with you in your struggles. Our prayers are with you that we do find peace and health and harmony, because across this world there are wars being waged over resources against Indigenous people, and we are paying the price. whether it's at the hands of the WTO, the IMF, the World Bank, or places like Snowball or Squawkwog, you know, we are still here and we will continue to be here. So keep up the struggle, and you're in our prayers.
Right on, you know, right back at you. Thank you so much. Yeah, best of luck.
Yeah.